Through sobs and sniffles, the girl said something about rules.
Rules, he said. A pox on rules, I say.
He noticed her heaving bosom and her pretty narrow waist.
Please, sir, he is most firm about the other guard.
Missy, he said, I am the other guard, standing here before you, and I'll see your dear brother on the train with no delay, and never you mind that blackguard.
Oh, sir, I am in your debt,
she said, managing a smile through her tears.
Macpherson was overwhelmed.
He was a young man, and it was springtime, and the girl was pretty, and soon to be in his debt. At the same instant, he felt the greatest compassion and tenderness for her distress. Altogether, he was set spinning with the emotions of the moment.
"Just you wait,"
he promised, and turned to chastise Burgess for the heartless and overzealous adherence to the rules. But before he could make known his opinion, he saw the first of the grey-uniformed armed guards of Huddleston and Bradford bringing the bullion consignment down the platform towards them. The loading was carried out with sharp precision. First, two guards came down the platform, entered the van, and made a quick search of the interior. Then eight more guards arrived in neat formation around two flat carts, each pushed by a gang of grunting, sweating porters, and each piled high with rectangular, sealed strong boxes. At the van, a ramp was swung down, and the porters joined together to push first one and then the other of the laden flat carts up into the van to the waiting safes. Next, an official of the bank, a well-rigged gent with an air of authority, appeared with two keys in his hand. Soon after, Macpherson's uncle, the dispatcher, arrived with a second pair of keys. His uncle and the bank's man inserted their keys in the safes and opened them. The bullion strong boxes were loaded into the safes, and the doors were shut with a massive metal clang that echoed in the interior of the luggage van. The keys were twisted in the locks, the safes were secured. The man from the bank took his keys and departed. Macpherson's uncle pocketed his keys and came over to his nephew.
"Mind your work this morning," he said. "Open every parcel large enough to hold a knave, and no exception."
He sniffed the air.
"What's that ungodly stink?"
Macpherson nodded over his shoulder to the girl and the coffin a short distance away. It was a pitiful sight, but his uncle frowned with no trace of compassion.
"Scheduled for the morning train, is it?"
"Yes, uncle."
"See that you open it,"
the dispatcher said, and turned away.
"But, uncle,"
Macpherson began, thinking he would lose his newly gained favour with the girl by insisting on such a thing. The dispatcher stopped.
"No stomach for it? Dear God, you're a delicate one."
He scanned the youth's agonised face, misinterpreting his discomfiture.
"All right, then. I'm near enough to death that it holds no terrors for me. I'll see to it myself."
And the dispatcher strode off towards the weeping girl and her coffin. Macpherson trailed reluctantly behind. It was at that moment that they heard an electrifying, ghastly sound. The ringing of Mr. Bateson's patented bell.
This ends Disc 6.